Thank you very much, Brian. Well, earlier we were discussing the weekend delays in Dublin Airport. And for more on this now, I'm joined by Ryanair CEO Eddie Wilson. Good morning to you. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Claire.
So what's your understanding of what's been happening over the weekend and what's been causing the delays that resulted in well over 1,000 people, according to the DAA themselves, missing their flights altogether?
Yeah, I think this has been growing over the last number of weeks. You know, a lot of employers seem to have let their people go and then somehow or other thought that they would, you know, those people would magically come back to them. You've got to manage this over a much longer term. Like in our case, and our people took an awful lot of pain during COVID, where there were, you know, very short flight schedules throughout the whole pandemic. But we kept everybody employed on the basis that we were going to return to normality at some stage. Like, to put it in context, we flew just over 500,000 people yesterday across Europe. I think 530,000 people. 25,000 of those were scheduled to go through Dublin Airport as departing passengers. About 1,500 of those missed their flights. We didn't have that type of, you know, there are minor problems.
1,500 of your passengers missed their flights?
Yeah, close to 1,500 like missed their flights yesterday.
But then the estimate of just over 1,000 must be way off.
Yeah, well, we would be the largest airline at Dublin Airport, and I think most of the issues were at Terminal 1. But, close to 1,500, I think, missed their flights yesterday. You have an element of no-shows in that as well, so that might account for it, like where people didn't turn up at the airport but didn't go as booked. So I wouldn't fall out over the numbers there, but it's close to that. But what you have is you don't have enough staff. People, not unreasonably then, react to what's on social media. They see queues and people are coming, you know, early for flights. That's what people are doing. And that makes a bad situation worse. They need to have, there's 15 lanes, the maximum 15 lanes in security. And at the best of times, you know, it takes some time to get through security. But like, you need to have, yesterday I think there was only six of those open. And from what we know, there were some, there were staff no-shows for that. They need to, we call for this last June with the Minister for Transport, Eamon Ryan. You need to get the army in there because they already have security clearance. One of the biggest issues of working at the airports nowadays is that you have to be security cleared before you do your training. The army are already security cleared. They could augment the already trained staff there who work on the more specialised areas of security screening and could aid with that assistance. And if they were able to tell people every evening that 15 lanes are going to be open tomorrow, then people, as they did after April or after the April spike in Easter, people then gradually get, you know, comfortable with the idea there's not going to be any inordinate delays at the airport. Yeah, but now you've got people turning up 5 and 6 hours before.
That's it. But it's quite the step to take, isn't it, to draft in the army to solve this problem. Do you see that as being the only way to solve it in the short term?
You've got a short-term problem. It's difficult to hire people. It's not like hiring people for a store or a factory. They need to be security cleared. All the army are security cleared already. They would add some, you'd get people in there immediately that could free up other staff. It is oscillating too much. We're waiting for these people to be trained and to come through the system. And I think if they do that now, it would help with queue management. It would help with people directing. It would help with, you know, patting down people as they go through security. And the people who are already, border force up there and the airport police who do this through security up there could do the more specialised jobs of where they're, you know, monitoring, obviously, the cameras and that going through on baggage screening. And that's what they need to do. It's a resourcing issue. It's quite straightforward, but it should have been done months ago and there should have been no need to let these people go. It was silly to do that.
And how much hassle is this causing for Ryanair? You've got to rebook people. You've got people looking for refunds, I'm sure, when they miss their flights. I mean, I assume you're having to deal with the business end of all of that.
Yeah, I mean, that end of it is reasonably straightforward because, you know, people can rebook their flights if there's a major issue like we had yesterday. But what really happens then is that, you know, the question then is whether aircraft go on time or not. If they don't go on time, pilots have a certain amount of hours to fly that day. If the aircraft doesn't come back after its second flight and the new crew come on, then they go out of hours the next day, and then that gradually builds. You know, there's already ATC problems around Europe, but, I mean, it's very simple. You know, people don't really want to be going to airports. They don't really want to be going on airplanes. They just want to get to where they want to go. It's not unreasonable that an airport is resourced. Like, we have the people, we've got the aircraft, we worked hard through this pandemic. Our people took a lot of pain on much lower salaries throughout this. They're now back. We want to get passengers there. And people have been locked up for 2 years. And now, like, simple things like the amount of security staff, like, it's not acceptable.
We had a message in from a listener, a couple of listeners actually saying the same thing, that it's unfortunate, but it's the case all over Europe that the airports are clogged up. Is that right?
No, like, there were some issues in Manchester Airport earlier this month. There were some issues at Berlin and Cologne. But, like, the Spanish airports, the Portuguese airports are largely, you know, and the Italian airports are working well. They kept their people employed. Now, maybe it was to do with the furlough systems that they have in those countries, whatever, better supported keeping people for longer. But you had to take the decision. Look, the pandemic's going to be over at some stage, and, like, how you expect to let people go and then for people then not to, you know, like, and then you're surprised that they're not around when at a moment's notice, particularly in an industry where you need to have people security cleared.
So you're saying this is mismanagement by the Dublin Airport Authority, pure and simple?
Yes, because you can't let people go and then not have, you know, you have to plan for the required amount of staff through security at a minimum. And that clearly hasn't happened. And they've been coming from behind on this all the time.
Now, the bank holiday weekend approaching, and we're getting so many messages from people who are just dreading it. You know, if they've plans to go away, they're wondering how far in advance they need to get to the airport. What are they going to be facing? What are you saying to people?
I think what the DAA, and we're meeting them today, and we're meeting the minister today, and I think they need to communicate with the public to say...
Which minister are you meeting? Are you Minister Ryan or Minister Nocton?
Nocton.
Okay.
And what we have is they should communicate every day with the public to say that they're going to have the maximum number of lanes open tomorrow, 15. That will give people comfort that you, like, even at, it's busy at this time of the year to get through security. And I think people will, you know, normally expect, you know, on a busy day in a normal summer of maybe 30 minutes to get through security, or, you know, 15 to 30 minutes. But I think if they say 15 lanes are open, then there's no reason for people not to come any later than 2.5 hours should be the max, because you get into all sorts of difficulties when people are going to come out for 5 and 6 hours beforehand, and that will compound the situation. So get boots on the ground with the army and then communicate every day and say that there's 15 lanes open. And I think after a couple of days, I mean, things have improved there today. They're just talking to our ground handling people up at the airport. And if they can maintain that, well, then we'll be back to a proper flow through. And if we get, I think if we get the army in, that would really help. And I think visibly it would look, it would also be very reassuring that we're doing something.
So,
like, let's forget about, like, you know, we're worried about this and what does it look like. It was a mess yesterday. I heard people on your program earlier today, some German people saying that they queued for 6 hours, they're never coming back to Ireland again. So we've that sort of reputational damage, we should go and do something quickly. I mean, you see army personnel at airports throughout Europe, you know, in Spain and places like that.
So you're saying get the 15 lanes open and that would solve it?
That solves it. That absolutely solves it. It just spirals out of control. When they've had the maximum number of lanes open, then it works. There, you know, it's a busy summer schedule. It's our busiest summer schedule ever at Dublin Airport. And yes, you would normally have, even with that level, been fully resourced. Probably, you know, half an hour, maybe 15 minutes. But, like, what happens is it just builds out of control because you've got people there 6 hours beforehand, other people arriving at the last minute, not aware of it, particularly people who are here, tourists who are not aware of the problems at Dublin Airport, don't tune into RTE or whatever.
So, well, it's being reported now in the UK, and I see Australian media as well has picked the story up. We heard that German passenger, not good for the rep overseas.
Yeah. Not good at all. And I mean, we are, you know, and that feeds into, you know, the other narrative today is where they're trying to double charge us. Like, all those people want to do is get through an airport. That's it.
Okay.
Just get through it. Like, put the management to work on solving the security crisis. Stop worrying about building tunnels under runways, which is the latest game that we're going to double airport charges out there. mean less traffic. But look, okay, that's for another day.
All
but
right,
like, we need to get this solved this week.
We need to solve this pretty quickly. Eddie, thanks for joining us on the programme. Eddie Wilson,
thanks,
CEO of Ryanair. Graham McQueen, Media Relations Manager with the Dublin Airport Authority, is on the line now. And I know there's a meeting happening between the Minister of State, Hildegard Nocton, and the DAA Chief Executive, Dalton Phillips. Has anything emerged from that meeting yet, Graham?
My understanding is that the meeting is still ongoing. However, I think one of the things we've committed to do at that meeting is to come up with a plan. As you have said, as your previous caller has said as well, Eddie, I think the weekend scenes weren't acceptable. We hold our hands up and unreservedly apologise to anyone who's affected by that. I was out here yesterday myself. I experienced it for pretty much the whole day. It wasn't good enough. We hold our hands up. We've got to do better. And now it's up to us to look at what went wrong, come up with a plan to make sure that it doesn't happen again.
It's embarrassing, isn't it, when you hear the UK and Australian media reporting about the shambles at Dublin Airport. It's just such a bad look for us, isn't it?
It's frustrating for everyone. And look, again, I can only apologise to those who were affected. I think what we're trying to do as an airport, we're trying to build back from a pandemic, which pretty much had our business on the floor for the best part of 2 years. It has taken time for us to get up to speed. I think if you look at the last major blip that we had at the end of March, the 2 months since then, we've been doing pretty well. We've been getting 98% of passengers through in less than 45 minutes. But we had a bump at the weekend, a major one at that. And look, we're going to have to recover from that in the days and weeks ahead. We need to look at what went wrong and we need to come up with a plan to fix it.
But you don't have much time to sort this out. Coming into the bank holiday weekend, you heard Eddie Wilson there saying, just get the army in, get the 15 lanes open, problem solved. What do you say to that idea?
Well, I think the root of our success over the last 2 months in terms of turning it around from that incident at the end of March is we've deployed our own army in the terminals. We've had our own staff task force.
But where were they yesterday and the day before?
I was on there yesterday as well. We are working away on that. It is happening. The weekend was a blip. We need to prove that over the coming days and weeks.
Why was it a blip, Graham? Because I don't understand how you're telling me on the one hand we were solving the problems, we had it sorted since we had issues at Easter, we had a blip over the weekend. What happened? Did lots of people phone in sick or what went on?
There was an element of that. There was also an element of the fact that we're trying to deal with growing passenger numbers on pretty much a weekly basis at the moment. Passenger numbers are growing all the time.
Yeah, but you know how many are coming into the airport on any given day. It's not a surprise on a Monday morning when you look at the schedule. Oh, we have so many coming in today. Who'd have thought? That can't be a surprise to you.
Well, we know how many passengers are due to depart on that day. Sometimes it can be a bit higher. If you look at yesterday, for example, we fell behind early in the day. We didn't have enough staff on early on. We didn't have enough security lanes on early on. And that had a ripple effect through the day. We got out to sick.
Why?
We rely on a flow of passengers through the day.
Yeah, but I don't know why there weren't enough staff on.
We roster for the night before, we'd have looked at the rosters to make sure we had enough staff on, but that can be knocked out of sync. And unfortunately, that happened at the weekend, mainly through a combination of staff absence. There was a number of staff off yesterday, and if they're for particular roles, it means we can't open a security lane. So even dropping one security lane causes an impact on the business.
Unplanned absences.
That was an issue at the weekend. We also had early presentations from passengers who maybe arrived a bit earlier. As I say, it knocked us out of sync.
So people phoned in sick and you were caught on the hop?
That was part of the reason, yes. We also had early presentation from passengers. There were a number of issues yesterday. And look, there's more to it than that. We're sitting down today. Tomorrow we will work out exactly what went wrong and we need to come up with a plan that's going to correct this.
Okay, what about that idea that the army comes in just to solve the short-term problem, get you going for the weekend until you get these staff trained and ready? And I think you said, or Kevin Cullinan, you said that by the end of June you should be sorted out with the staff recruitment and training issue. Until then, get the army in to help you. What do you say?
Well, we're open to all options. At the moment, if you were to bring the army in, there's very limited things they can do in the terminal. They'd effectively be doing the same job that I was doing yesterday in the terminal. I was loading trays to help out the security guys who are trained. So bringing them in sounds like a great idea, but there's very limited stuff they can do.
They don't have security clearance, do they not?
they won't have can the X-ray people, can they pat people down? You need specialist training for this type of stuff. It takes 5 to 6 weeks to get that type of training. So it sounds like a great idea, but it's not the quick fix that it might seem.
Okay.
We are in the process of hiring security staff at the moment, and that's the long-term fix here. We're in the process of hiring 380 staff. We're over halfway getting them on board. We've 200 either started or have a start date to start in the coming weeks. They're going through the training process. That's the fix here. Once we get them on board, we'll be where we need to be and we'll be able to accommodate passenger growth that's coming our way.
All right, so that's fine. That's the medium-term problem. But say I'm flying at the weekend, what am I facing?
Well, the passenger advice from us at the moment means for a short-haul flight, 2.5 hours before your departure. For a long-haul flight, 3.5 hours before.
But I might miss my flight if I follow that advice, given what happened at the weekend.
We are committed as a business this week to making sure that we have enough staff to deal with the numbers that are going to come through. We will put a plan in place for that.
But you told passengers at the weekend to arrive 2.5 and 3.5 hours before their flight, and they missed their flight. They had to go home.
We have been telling passengers for the last 2 months to come within those timeframes, and we have gotten, up until the weekend, we got 98% of passengers through in less than 45 minutes, 90% through in less than half an hour. We hit a bump at the weekend. As I say, we need to explore the full reasons behind that and correct it. I accept that.
But Graham, you're guaranteeing people who are going to arrive on a weekend where it's going to be even busier. You're saying to them, if you arrive 2.5 and 3.5 hours before their flight, that they will get out.
And I'm also saying to you as well that part of the problem here is that when people arrive too early, it has a knock-on effect. If people arrive 2.5 hours before a short-haul flight, 3.5 hours before a long-haul flight, if you do need to drop a bag, I probably would give a bit of extra time. I think we've been on record in the past 24 hours of saying you probably need to allow an extra hour on top of that. If you stick within that, if every passenger sticks within that, it will ensure a steady flow of passengers through the airport.
Yeah, you're asking a lot, though, on faith, given what happened, because we have John here who says he's going to Tenerife 3 o'clock next Saturday afternoon. There's no way in hell he's going to risk going to the airport 2 hours before the flight. He's going to go at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, look, and I can understand. As I say, I was out there yesterday. We apologised unreservedly to the likes of John and passengers like that.
But you're saying to him, don't turn up at 8 o'clock in the morning because you're going to give us a bigger headache.
Well, that's what we saw yesterday. Passengers turning up early. If you've got a flight at 3 o'clock in the afternoon,
John, over 1,000 people, 1,500 according to Eddie Wilson, Ryanair passengers, missed their flight over the weekend. But John, you're going to Tenerife next Saturday. Don't worry. Turn up 2.5 hours before your flight, we'll get you out.
And if he's going to Tenerife, he's probably taking a bag. If he can check in online, we'd absolutely recommend that. If he's dropping the bag, we'd suggest give another hour. Give him another hour so he can drop the bag, you can get through security and get off on to Tenerife and have a great holiday.
So we've got new rules now. We've got 3.5 hours for a flight to Tenerife, which is still in the short haul category.
If you have a bag to drop in, that's what we would recommend.
Okay, let's just go back through the timeline here, Graham, because in 2021, in August, Dublin Airport apologised for security queues back then and warned people to turn up early. March 2022, you were warning people to turn up early because you had to apologise again for the queues. Easter, another apology, another warning to turn up early, and we've queues outside the terminal then. April, you said you'd turned a corner, you had a 5-point plan, everything was going to be sorted out going into June, and here we are today.
I think it's the signs of an airport that, like airports all around Europe, that are trying to build back post-COVID. I think you mentioned it yourself in your previous interview. Other airports are having to deal with this as well. We're no different in Dublin. We are trying to grow back. Passenger numbers have came back quicker than anyone expected. All the analysts out there, you know, including ourselves, we didn't think we'd be where we are now. We're probably approaching 95% of passenger numbers from 2019. That is a massive jump back in airline activity, and we're having to deal with that as an airport.
But lots of companies have had to manage this. Eddie Wilson was talking about it. You know, you have to look at what's going to happen. You have to plan ahead. And he accused you of mismanagement. But it hasn't just been about the queues, Graham. I mean, there have been fights inside the airport. We've all seen the video of those incidents. Gardaí investigating alleged assaults and theft of belongings by staff members in the airport. Then you had a Sunday newspaper front page last weekend saying that guns and explosive device components had made it through scanners in a safety audit. I mean, what's going on? Is the airport fit for purpose?
I'll be the first to admit, as part of the media team, I'm at the heart of dealing with this on a daily basis. We have had a very bad run, and the job is for us now. We have got to win back the trust of our passengers, our customers, our airlines as well. Eddie speaking before us, we've got to win the trust back. If you go back to 2019 and the years before, Dublin Airport was renowned worldwide for the customer service that we provide, and we're committed to getting back to that as soon as we possibly can.
All right, but a lot of damage, would you agree, has been done over the last number of days?
We have a big job on our hands to do what I just said, to win that trust back, to get our reputation back to where it needs to be. But the team here are absolutely committed to make that happen.
All right, Graham McQueen, Media Manager at Dublin Airport Authority. Thanks for talking to us this morning. Coming up next, heartbreak for Liverpool, but that was compounded by the trouble at the turnstile. So what really happened at the Champions League final in Paris over the weekend? Guillaume Balaguer gives us his take. That's after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
At St. Patrick's Mental Health Services, our priority is to continue providing the highest quality mental health care. Our tailored home care service offers team-based assessment, treatment and support. Talk to your GP, visit stpatricks.ie or call 01249 3333. St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. Don't wait. The road to recovery starts here.
RTE Radio 1. Elton John. Farewell Yellow Brick Road. The final tour. Friday, July 1st, Parky Queen. Subject to license. Extra tickets available now. Presented by Aiken Promotions. Music updates on RTE Radio 1.
The Ray Darcy Show, weekdays from 3 on RTE Radio 1.
I heard at one stage that there were too many books around.
There's too many books at the moment. We have loads in the back.
What's the most common book that's donated? At one stage it was 50 Shades of Grey was the one.
We have had a couple of them in now, plus the board game and everything.
Yeah,
so.
There's a board game, is there?
There sure is.
Is there right? I didn't know that. 50 Shades of Grey, the board game. I'll let my imagination go off of that for a
there
while.
There you go, yeah, now. Yeah.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
French Sports Ministry, UEFA, local authorities and police are meeting in Paris today to discuss the fallout from the events which marred the Champions League final on Saturday evening. The match itself was delayed for 36 minutes due to thousands of Liverpool fans still queuing to get into the stadium. Despite queuing for up to 4 hours to get inside, some fans complained of police heavy-handedness after they were sprayed with tear gas. On the pitch, of course, Liverpool lost to Real Madrid, and in a moment I'll be speaking to broadcaster and soccer journalist Guillaume Balaguer, but first I'm joined on the line by Labour MP for Liverpool and West Derby, Ian Byrne, who was at the game and witnessed at first hand the treatment of supporters. Ian, thank you very much for joining us this morning. So you were at the Stade de France. What did you see?
Hey, good morning, Claire. It was horrific. The scenes were absolutely horrific, to be honest. From the whole experience was one of hostility, awful management. And the scenes that we've all seen on the TV reflect exactly what happened. And you know, from my perspective, it was the worst I've ever seen since 1989.
And you were there at Hillsborough.
I was at Hillsborough, yeah. Yeah, 16-year-old.
Did it bring back memories of that time?
It did. It did indeed. When we were trying to get through the turnstiles, they actually had two turnstiles open in a row of 12 turnstiles. So there was only two accessing people at a very slow rate. Obviously, people had been there for up to 3 hours. It was 23 degrees. People wanted to go to the toilet. It was lots and lots of people, but in a really, really distressed state. And eventually, we get through the turnstiles and they get to the other side, and I begged the security. I begged them to open the other turnstiles so the fans could get in, because you could actually see them being crushed. So, yeah, it brought back horrific memories, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then when you heard the people inside being told that the start of the match was delayed because what officials described as Liverpool fans arriving late, I mean, when did you become aware that that was being said inside the stadium?
It was only when we actually got in the stadium, because I didn't go into the game because I was actually standing next to an old-time friend who was looking for his son in the melee, so we could see the gate that we'd come through. We were on a on a platform, and we were watching his son progress through and eventually come through. So we wanted to ensure he was safe, and then we went in and seen a screen which said, Liverpool fans to blame for being late. And it's the template from 1989, isn't it? You know, blame the Liverpool fans, not look at your own culpability. And this, what we experienced on Saturday, lies solely at the feet of the French authorities and UEFA. It was chaotic, complete, awful mismanagement getting into the stadium, but also the scenes before and after the stadium, the local huge, mugging people, lots and lots of people got the phones robbed, and wallets and tickets, and there was massive issues outside the stadium before and after the game, with the police nowhere to be seen.
Sounds just so grim. But I've also heard it said this morning, and I'll bring you the latest comments from the French sports minister in a minute, but that there were an awful lot of fans, Liverpool fans, who were there without tickets.
Well, I can only speak as I find. That's what I see, and that's all I'm going to say on this matter. And all I see, if you saw more people entering the stadium, was local youths scaling walls, jumping over gates, trying to take tickets off supporters. And when I actually got in the ground, Claire, we were surrounded by Parisian fans, from local fans, you know, who had no colours on, really had no idea what was going on. You were in there, and that was my experience, because we'd come over with supporters who just wanted to taste the atmosphere and stayed in Paris, and stayed in the centre of Paris to watch the game. So I can only say what I've seen, and yeah, they say it wasn't what's getting reflected by the French authorities.
Well, the French sports minister, as I said to you, new statement today, doubling down on blaming Liverpool and the football club and the supporters. And she's saying, the fact that the Real Madrid club has supervised the coming of its supporters to Paris to such an extent by scheduling buses from the airport and organising everything from start to finish, which contrasted sharply with what the Liverpool club did, letting its supporters out in the wild, made a huge difference.
That's just an awful statement, isn't it? And it's exactly, we're back to 1989, aren't we? We controlled the narrative, put out the lies, put out the smears, and try and take the easy option of blaming Liverpool supporters. And I think it's really important that, you know, obviously your listeners and people watching this and listening to this, and there'd be many Irish supporters that were over in Paris, because I was with lots of them, to be honest, on the Friday night. And that could have happened to any football club. You know, Manchester City were in the semi-final against Real Madrid, and that could have been any football club in Europe that actually experienced that hostility,
yes,
which come from the French police. Now, I've read many reports today from Real Madrid fans who said they experienced exactly the same issues we did. So, you know, I think there's a case here of trying to deflect blame, and that's why I've called for a full investigation into what actually happened,
okay,
because that stadium hosts many other finals or many other different sports as well, Claire,
yeah,
and we cannot ever have supporters go through what we went through on Saturday night.
Yeah, and people have said that it's pure luck that, you know, the outcome wasn't worse.
Absolutely.
Than it was. Labour MP for Liverpool and West Derby, Ian Byrne. Thanks, Ian, for joining us on the programme. Guillaume Balaguer, as I said, is with us. And Guillaume, we'll get to the action on the pitch in a few minutes, but you were there, you were inside the stadium when all of this was unfolding outside. Did you know what was going on? Were there signs of this when you were coming through?
When we started hearing that there was going to be a delay, yes, you start asking questions, people that may be outside or the journalist, and then you started to realize the dimension of the situation. I'm so glad of the statements that come from the government in France, because when this gets investigated, it will expose them as lies and as people that just want to blame the fans, hoping that everything goes away. But Liverpool are determined, and I hope the British government as well are determined to find out the details of it. Thank God for social media, for journalists that decided to change the job or the briefing of the jobs at that point, and have got enough evidence from both, from the fans, from the journalists, of how badly it was the organisation. It's interesting that they trying to say, oh, look, Real Madrid, they didn't have any problems. They did have their problems as well, and that's coming out to the light too. It's true that it's the access where Real Madrid were coming in. It's harder to get to for those youths that you're talking about that made life complicated as well. And I saw jumping fences. So all in all, we'll get to the bottom of it, I'm sure. We won't let it go. and will expose the lies of French government and French police.
Yeah, I mean, it's just extraordinary to see the statements today doubling down, as I was saying to Ian, on blaming Liverpool Football Club and Liverpool fans, and in particular fans who they say didn't turn up or turned up without having any tickets. Ken Early is writing in the Irish Times today about it, and he's saying that it's just much more complicated to get into the stadium from that side. So the Real Madrid fans were coming in through the north entrance. It was a smooth run, but when you're coming from the other way, you're into tunnels. There were police vans blocking the route. It was bound to be difficult, and there were bound to be bottlenecks.
Yes, and it is true that stories will come out of fake tickets. It happens in every competition of people trying to get in, perhaps wearing the Liverpool shirt. I know that at 8:30, for instance, half an hour before what was supposed to be kickoff, in the Real Madrid end, there were English fans trying to get in as well, and I'm not sure they had tickets or not. These are scenes that happens in every game, in every tournament, is a total minority. And if they actually, the authorities start focusing on that and not in the real problems, which was not to have proper access, perhaps the checks should have happened much earlier. Should have been at least three layers of security, as there are in these kinds of, or used to be. Because it wasn't in Wembley either in the Euros, but it used to be two and even three layers of security in World Cups, European tournaments. If all that comes back, it'll be easier to go in and there won't be trouble. It's an organisational failure of the highest proportions, and UEFA and the French government have to answer for it.
Listen, inside then, the match itself, I thought it was pretty flat. Did you?
Do you know what? He has to. I went to the fan zone, the Liverpool fan zone. The atmosphere was unbelievable. Oh my God! It was so much fun. The positivity, the good vibes. And I thought, if they take a little bit this to the ground, oh my God, Real Madrid, just be careful for what's coming. But from 9 o'clock, the atmosphere was flat.
Yeah.
When everybody started coming in, there wasn't a roar. There wasn't much. I know that people didn't really enjoy it, even though staying in, but anyway, the game starts, and what you had was a team dominating, and that was Liverpool. And they had the chance when Courtois made one of his first miracle saves and he hits the post. But obviously, we know the result, but I play you the game again, and I don't tell you the result. And you're thinking, oh, Liverpool has won this, hasn't it? If I take the goal away, because Courtois had to make 9 saves. No other goalkeeper in the history of the Champions League had to make so many saves in a final.
He was extraordinary. Oh. I mean, that was the part of the game that I enjoyed watching, just to see him. You're gaping at the screen going, he's done it again? Well, who is
again,
this guy?
Yes. Well, I must confess you a secret. I started a poll, a kind of debate on Twitter about Alisson or Courtois, and he follows me. And he was having a lot of fun with it, but then it became a little bit not so much fun because everybody went like, there is no debate.
Okay.
Courtois is horrible. And he followed that. So I met him on the pitch at the end of the game and he gave me a big hug and he says, what will they say now? So he was actually being motivated by Twitter and by the English fans and the Liverpool fans that didn't think much of him.
It's interesting what he said there after the game. Today I needed a win. To win a final for my career, for all the hard work, to put respect on my name, because I don't think I have enough respect, especially in England.
Yeah, it's what I'm telling you. It wasn't just the poll this week, but the feeling that he's had for a long time. Maybe he thinks because of the way he left Chelsea. I added, no, Thibaut, it's not just that. It's just that you're not in England. And because you're not in England, you don't really count that much. It's like, Alisson is the best goalkeeper in the world. To be honest, they're both super goalkeepers. But he has felt a little bit ill-treated, if you like. You remember that poll that was in 442 online, top 10 goalkeepers in the world? Do you know which position out of those 10 Courtois was?
No,
he wasn't in the list.
He wasn't in it. He will be the next time. Surely he'll be in it the next time. So the swagger that you were talking about on Friday when we were chatting, these guys in the black suits and the white shirts, and they're all so young and so confident and so, I think you said, arrogant. They were right about themselves, weren't they?
Yes, and you have to say that because they won. But my God, if you're going to win, shouldn't you play a little bit better? But in any case, the second half, it was a different story. There was a less sharp Liverpool. There was a Real Madrid, that not once they scored the goal, they started defending in their own box. And they, at that moment, there is game management, there is intelligence, there is quality to bring the ball from the back. There is team effort. Everybody knows that they're going to give absolutely everything for the teammates. All that was impressive. And then they win, and of course it's the 14th title. And my God, how do they do it? Because if you put Milan and Liverpool together, the titles is one less. And then you start scratching. And I, in the 21st century, European Cups wins put together, 33 for Spain, 13 for England. And if you put the last 11 finals, Champions League and Europa League, Spain-England, it's 10-1. So I'm thinking, I'm going to spend the summer thinking about this. How is this possible that it is such a huge domination in the most important games by Spain and England fail? First, I'll revel on it, and then I'll think about it.
I hope you get to do more than that over the summer, Guillaume, in fairness. But thank you so much. It's been lovely to talk to you, Guillaume Balagay there. A little update from Dublin Airport. The family, if you were listening earlier, who spoke to Evelyn, they're travelling to Disneyland. Remember them? They were at the airport really, really early this morning. They still haven't had their bags checked in. Now, they've been at the airport since 8 o'clock this morning. Their flight's at 2 o'clock. So the problems at the airport are now building at the check-in desks, and passengers are arriving, understandably, after what happened at the weekend. They're arriving early to check in, but too early in some cases. So we'll keep an eye on that family, and hopefully we'll bring you an update. And it might be good news. We really hope it's good news for them as they try to get away on that once-in-a-lifetime holiday. Coming up next, we're encouraging more people to use public transport. So is it time to ban taxis from the bus lanes? We'll debate that.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.